Roll up, roll up. Ladies and gentlemen, beggars and harlots, urchins, vagabonds, miscreants, ne'er-do-wells, ignoble noblemen, and libertines alike.
Ladies and gentlemen, those of you from this world and the next, it gives me great pleasure to present the Satanic Player Society, traveling sideshow of the macabre. Join us as we bring you wonders from the abyss, prose from the shadows, and tales of horror and madness. Now, it brings me great joy to introduce tonight's performers, each bringing their own skills and talents to the show. Please be standing and give a round of applause for Rachel, the Dragon Lady. Her scales are as tough as steel, her claws sharper than any blade. But that's not the most terrifying thing about this lady. The fire she breathes can turn a person to ash in mere seconds. Well, hello, my friends. Here we are again, together for another evening of enjoyment. Spring has arrived, and with nights getting longer, children can enjoy playing outdoors. In tonight's story, one such child does just that, innocently enjoying himself, completely unaware of the horrors about to befall him, and indeed, the world. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to present The Cabin, written by M.R. Stover.
Little Dean crept through the woods, the soles of his brown hiking boots crunching in the dry pine needles that blanketed the forest floor. The wind breezed through the old olive service jacket that hung from the boy's body, as the coat was meant for a grown man. His camo ball cap kept what little sunlight that filtered through the trees out of his eyes, and he kept the muzzle of his air rifle pointed towards the ground, but remained ready to raise it to his shoulder to fire, should he see the beast he stalked through the woods. Further and further away from his grandparents' house, farther than he'd ever gone before. His two-way walkie-talkie crackled as he heard his grandmother's voice say,
"Dean, lunch in 1 hour. Bologna sandwiches and macaroni and cheese."
He paused, taking his walkie-talkie off his belt, and keyed the mic. "Roger, roger, Grandma. Be back by then. Over and out." He replaced the mic and checked to make sure his hip cap gun revolver was still in its holster at his hip, and touched the handle of his cheap, dull, but real survival knife that hung from his belt. He pushed the thought of bologna and mac and cheese from his mind as he continued to stalk the wounded monster he hunted, a werewolf, wounded by one of his silver BBs only an hour earlier. He caught a glimpse of movement in the trees and snapped his rifle up, only to lower it just as quickly. He didn't want to accidentally shoot his faithful hound, Kesh, who was actually a German Shepherd Quiche hound, Mix. Suddenly, he saw it, the werewolf, or a gnarled tree stump, and he put a silver round into it, racked another one into the chamber, pumped the grip, and fired again. And again, and again, until his rounds ran out. But the beast wouldn't die. So he dropped his rifle and unloaded all six caps into it, their detonation echoing in the woods and filling the air with the match-like smell. The beast was almost done, so Dean set upon it with his knife and stabbed it until it no longer moved. Panting, Dean stood over his vanquished foe and replaced his knife, reloaded his cap gun, and painstakingly reloaded his air rifle. His walkie-talkie crackled, but he couldn't make out what his grandma was saying. But he figured that it was lunchtime, so he called his dog. "Kesh! Kesh, come here!" No dog appeared, so he stomped off into the woods to look for him. "Kesh! Kesh!" he called again and again, wandering further and further into the unexplored territory. He came upon a cabin near a murky body of water. Kesh was sniffing around the perimeter of the structure, which, upon closer examination, appeared to have been abandoned ages ago. Part of the wall had caved inwards, and the windows had been smashed out. Dean, being an adventurous sort, went to investigate. The cabin was little more than a single room, and inside found an abandoned trove of various small toys. There were a few little green army men, a battered Hot Wheels car, a plastic lizard, and two Beanie Babies. One was a puppy, the other was a kitten. Both had seen better days. He put them all into his fanny pack and continued to search. Carved deeply into the walls of the cabin was the word Sin, which he didn't quite understand, and he found a book called The Holy Bible, where the same word was written in red ink on all of the pages over and over again. Next to the book was a broken silver necklace with a small medallion of a winged man. He tucked the necklace into his pack and continued to explore. On the other side of the cabin, he found what his dad called a cement mixer and long, rusted rods of metal. He picked up one of the rods and smacked it in the side of the mixer. The loud sound got his dog's attention and Kesh came to stand by his side. Dean dropped the bar and he and the dog wandered over to the water to peer into its murky depths. He imagined all manner of strange and bizarre aquatic beasts that could be lurking just below the surface, waiting for him to get closer and closer, so they could leap out at him like a crocodile, snatch him in their teeth to rip his flesh to shreds, while they drug him under the water to drown him. A little boy would surely make a wonderful little snack. Water bubbled up to the surface, and Dean's eyes grew wide with fear, and he ran home screaming. When he burst through the door, his grandma was putting sandwiches and a bowl of mac and cheese on the table for him. He told her in one breath, "Grandma, I killed a werewolf, and I found a lake with monsters in it." She looked at him and said, "Wow, you must have had an adventure. Go wash your hands and face lunch is getting cold." The thought of a yummy bologna sandwich and a creamy, cheesy bowl of mac forced thoughts of fear of what lurked below the murky water aside for now, and he did what his grandma said, washed up and enjoyed his lunch. Later that night, he had dinner, meatloaf with ketchup, green beans, and mashed taters, and had watched a movie about Hercules. He was promised a movie about ninjas after he took his bath. He was on his own for this one and filled up the tub and grabbed his rubber shark that either squeaked when you squeezed it or shot out water if you filled it up, and the army men he had found near the lake. When he had finished lining up the army men in the skirmish line, he thought about the lake and the monster that lurked within. And suddenly his bath didn't seem so safe or appealing. He began to walk towards the water, seemingly not of his own accord. He felt pulled to the water, like invisible hands were dragging him to it. He hadn't even taken off his clothes when he tumbled headfirst into the bath with a splash that felt like a great weight was dragging him down and holding him under. He tried to move and couldn't, and when he screamed for help, all that came out of his mouth were bubbles. Panic seized him, and he thrashed and struggled to move as water began to fill his mouth and lungs. Pain gripped his chest and his head, more agonizing than he'd ever felt before, and in the final moments before he ceased to breathe, he saw one of his army men floating down to the bottom of the tub, as if it too were weighed down with lead. Unknown to Dean or his grandparents, he had drowned and died, transcending into what would be considered clinical death, and had remained that way for well over 10 minutes. The toys he had found pulsed faintly with a sickening yellow light, and an unseen force crept into the dead boy's brain and insinuated itself there, permeating his mind and body, saturating his muscles and sinews, infecting his organs, and cursing him with second sight and senses beyond his capacity to understand. That force gripped him and moved him from invisible puppet strings. First, he went to the toilet and vomited out the dirty bathwater he had swallowed in his struggle, then removed his wet clothing and drained and refilled the bathtub with water. Before getting in the tub, a memory of events that had transpired flashed across his mind vision. One of submersion in murky water, dragged down by a heavy weight of chains and concrete blocks. But Dead did not remember anything from before or from his own ordeal that force fled control of his body, locking himself away in his mind, and Dean took his bath and played with his soldiers and shark as if nothing had ever happened. While Dean had been floating face down, dead in the bathtub, his grandparents sat in the living room watching the local news. Grandma was eating popcorn and reading a mystery novel, hardly paying attention to the tube, and Grandpa was sipping a bottle of beer and tossing back small handfuls of Chex Mix. He was paying attention to the newscaster's words caught his ear.
The search for Mary and David Waller continues. though police still have no leads. They say they won't close out the investigation until they find the twin children of local mother and churchgoer Abigail Walker, who remains hopeful that her children, who have been missing for months, will be found.
Grandpa shook his head in disbelief and empathy. Those kids were Dean's age. Down the highway, a local man watched the same news on a television mounted above the bar. He had been out of town for a long time doing contract work for the timber mill, and he was glad to be back in his hometown at his favorite watering hole. He gulped down his pint of Pabst Blue Ribbon and set his glass down on the table, lest it slip from his suddenly sweaty hands. He ordered another drink and asked for a shot of 10 High. He wondered about Abigail Walker. He had known her briefly 8 years and 9 months ago. He had known her in the carnal sense and hadn't seen her since. Abigail Walker shut her television off and went to her bedroom. She took a rosary out of her jewelry box and began to pray for the salvation of her children's souls. The clock in Dean's bedroom clicked over to read 3:33 a.m., and a foul wind seized the branches of the tree outside and scraped it across the child's bedroom window. Dean turned over in his sleep. A voice, faintly heard, came from the other side of the room. It was high and cheerful, not unlike the voice of a cartoon character.
Meow, meow, Dean. You should get up and color.
Dean woke, confused but compelled to do exactly what they said. He got out of his bed and went over to the shelf where his freshly acquired stuffed animals sat. He went to them and said, "You guys can talk?" The puppy answered him,
"You should hold us, Dean. Hold us, and then go color."
The kitty joined in again, its voice higher and garbled.
"Hold us, Dean, then color."
Astonished, Dean got up and retrieved a large three-subject spiral notebook and his box of crayons. He set them down on his desk and turned back to the shelf. The puppy and kitty began to make sounds like the animals they represented.
"Meow, meow, Dean, hold us."
"Oof, oof, hold us, Dean."
Their urging became frantic and Dean walked over to the shelf and took them in his arms, and like a key placed into a lock, the door to his body opened up to the will of the force that came into him when he died. Dean's eyes rolled back in his head and his tongue slipped from his mouth. His fingers curled like claws and the shade of his skin became yellow. The force took possession of his body and used him to give voice to its purpose. Dean picked up a red crayon and began to write in his notebook, his letters large and unrefined. "I am the angel of heaven, and I am the corpse. I am he who is one of the she that is two. I have two faces, one to see into the shadow, and one to gaze into the light. I was and ever shall be in the beginning, yet I am the end of all living things. He who will set the fires that will burn into the night, and she who will fan the flames and carry them upon the wind that harbors the scent of decay. I am the God who has placed the world in shackles, and I am she who will create upon the flesh the key that will set all free of bondage. I am he whose name is of the sound. Kal-em-mana, Sa-ra-alet. And I am she whose name is of the sound. Krista can kal Raina, Krep kali on kanet. Know ye my names, for they must be spoken at the time of the key is given to the earth and water, and at the time the key is given to air and fire. The key must be written 3 times upon parchment made from the skin of lambs. Whom shall know no blemish. Know now the key whose symbol is thus." Drew an intricate geometric design. "Know that it shall be written in the blood of mortal men. Know also that the fourth must kill the first, and the second shall be killed by the first, and the fifth shall kill the fourth, and the fifth shall sacrifice to the earth before the fifth unlocks the way. I shall be unseen savior, your God above all." A keening well escaped Dean's lips. Electricity in the house went haywire. All the lights flickered on and off, and the thing that held him released. Dean closed its book and was confused. Why am I coloring? Did my toys really talk to me? He crawled back into his bed, and his grandma checked on him a few minutes later. He had just let the dog out to the doggy business and had had a cigarette. He saw the lights flickering and thought he had heard Dean scream, but Grandma was still sleeping. Though she slept like a log, and Dean was in bed. Everything was A-okay, right? The man from the bar was Mick Townsend, and Mick Townsend was drunk. Not seeing double drunk, but most certainly stumbling drunk. He should not have been driving, but he was. He hadn't intended on getting drunk, but he did. Carolyn at the bar wouldn't tell him no, even though she went past his customary 2 to 3 drinks after his cheeseburger and fries he got every Thursday. Mick was a drinking man, but he rarely was a drinking and driving man. He preferred to be a drink and stay at home kind of guy. One who preferred the couple cans of Steel Reserve and a good porno flick on his bachelor couch, safe at home in his bachelor pad. Mick turned the corner onto the dirt road and said pad loomed in sight, and he pulled the car up to the driveway and got out. He retrieved his 12-pack of Steel Reserve cans that the clerk at Fast Stop shouldn't have sold him, and a fresh pack of smokes from the back seat of his pickup truck, and stumbled up the stairs to his porch and let himself into the single wide trailer. He went into the kitchen and ripped a beer can out of the box and tossed the rest into the fridge. He noticed that the light on his answering machine was flashing to indicate he had a message. He chose to ignore it for now. He had a feeling as to who it was and what the message might be about. He wanted some barbecue potato chips and the other half of his tuna sandwich left over from lunch. And more beer. At least 2 more before he listened to that goddamn message. He knew it was her, and he didn't want to deal with it right this fucking second. So he ate his sandwich and the rest of his chips, washing it all down with a beer. He crushed the can with his fist and tossed it slightly overflowing waste bin and opened another. He drank half and pressed play on the machine. It was her.
Hello, Mick. You may not remember me, but it's Abigail Walker. Maybe you saw me on the news and recognized me? I'm a little bit bigger than the girl who walked into the bar one night years ago. It's hard to stay thin when you're a single mother.
She said that in a sing-song voice.
But you wouldn't know about that now, would you?
She paused for a long time.
I should have told you. I mean, I knew where you worked, where you live. I could have called. I should have called. Mick, Mary, and David were yours. I told you I was on the pill, but I'm Catholic. I can't be on birth control. I should have not been at the bar drinking, and I should not have been with a man who wasn't my husband. But I had already been with Ray, and when I told him I wanted to stop doing it until we got married, he dumped me for that little slut, Becky Miller. Mick, I need you to meet me somewhere. It's a cabin out near the old fishery. It's run down and near a concrete lake. Just take Pinecrest, the dirt road, not the paved, out to the sign that says Juniper Trail. It's all shot up. And hike east for about a mile. Say around 3 in the afternoon. I need to confess something to you before God will forgive me.
The message stopped, and Mick slammed back his can as he got another one. Waves of rage and hurt coursed through him. She had no right to tell him. No right at all. At 6 in the morning, Dean was having a hearty breakfast of syrupy pancakes, scrambled eggs, bacon, and sausage, with a tall glass of orange juice to wash it all down with. Mick was a snoring lump of passed out drunk, having killed off most of his 12-er's Steel Reserve. Dean was dressed in his army fatigues and had his pack filled up with those army men and the stuffed animals. He had to take out his peach slice candy to make them fit. He almost had to take out the gummy worms and trail mix, too, but he wouldn't have compromised his beef jerky. Hunters needed beef jerky. It kept them strong. He needed to be strong. He was hunting vampires today. After breakfast, he packed his BB gun, his knife, his cap gun, and left through the garage. He stole Grandpa's can of Zippo fluid and box of matches, even though he knew not to play with fire, and that he was going to be in big trouble, mister, if and when he got caught, just in case he had to burn vampires out into the sunlight so they could die. Kesh, as always, accompanied him while he stalked the signs that led them to the vampire lair, aka the rundown cabin he had found yesterday. Once he was there, he was attacked by a lake monster, so he shot all of his silver bullets into it, and then he was attacked by a Bigfoot, who was almost as hairy as Dad and Grandpa. He killed that with his pistol. Then he was attacked by a daylight vampire, and he had to tumble and dash, sprint and roll to avoid being ripped by its claws. He fought it with only his knife and his superb karate ninja skills, along with his Hercules strength. In the end, he stood over his vanquished foe. After such an epic fight, he was tired and hot, so he took off his coat and threw it on the ground. He pulled out his toys and ate his beef jerky. He even gave some to Kesh and tried to convince the dog that the stuffed animals were real. The dog wasn't buying it. Next, he set up his army men and knocked them over when they got rat-a-tat-tatted, or when they got bushed to death. He ate his gummy worms and his trail mix and was about to leave when he noticed that his coat had fallen over the body of a daylight vampire, which he needed to burn. Otherwise, it would come back in the night and kill him. He pulled out the lighter fluid and nearly saturated his coat with the liquid, using most of it up. He was about to pull out a match, light it up, and toss it on the coat when a gruff voice stopped him.
Hey, kid! You gotta make a key first! Otherwise, that bloodsucker gonna come back and get you.
Confused, Dean looked around with wide-eyed amazement, realized that his boys' army men were talking to him. He asked, "What's the key?" A drill sergeant's voice answered him.
"It's the key, soldier! You remember, Private! The key? The key from the book, remember?"
He did remember, the book he wrote last night. The first voice said,
"You gotta cut it in your arm, soldier. That's the only way the fangs are gonna stay dead."
The drill sergeant said,
"You hear that, soldier? Cut that goddamn key into your goddamn arm, or you drop and give me 20!
Dean pulled the knife out and frowned. "It's gonna hurt."
"Do you want that freaking finger to kill you? To kill your grandma and your grandpapa? Suck it up, soldier. You hear me, Private?"
Dean nodded and his eyes rolled back in his head, and that force took over. He intoned in a voice not his own. And dug the point into his flesh of his left forearm. Kesh whined and sucked his tail in between his legs. Dean drew the next line of blood, began to spatter to the ground. The dog bent to rush forward, intent on saving his master from himself, when an invisible force smacked the animal into the water. By the time the dog got out of the water, Dean had finished slicing the key into his flesh. The first voice said,
"Now put it on your coat and toast that sucker."
Dean moved like an automation and he put his coat on. The drill sergeant voice said,
"Private, you give that thing more juice and light that sumbitch up."
Dean splashed the rest of the lighter fluid onto himself and pulled out several matches. He struck and touched the flames to his person. He caught fire in a violent whoosh and stood shock still, unable to move while the fire licked his body. He screamed, "Krista Ken, Cal, Mo, Ryan, Crep, Callie, on, Kenneth!" His incantation ended with a shrill scream that was answered by a peal of thunder as clouds gathered above the dying boy. Thunder woke Mick from his slumber, and he looked at the time on the face of the VCR and muttered, "Only 10 o'clock, goddammit." And he tried to go back to sleep and couldn't. That message. That goddamn message. He looked outside and saw it had been pouring rain, coming down really hard from the looks of it. Mick listened to the message again, and the pain of knowing that he had been a father to two kids who didn't even know him ate at his mind. His parents had separated early on, and his daddy skipped town, leaving his mother alone with him and his sister. Now his kids were gone. D-E-A-D, most likely, and that they would never know their pa. And if they weren't dead, then they'd curse him and shit on his absence, never even knowing that he didn't know. He feared he would never even get the chance to know them, either way, ever. It made him sad and heartbroken, which made him angry, very angry, with Abigail. Mick popped some Tylenol and sent them to his stomach with a whole can of beer. He was tired. His head hurt, and his gut was having an epic fight with some turds. He checked out his beer situation and made a decision that would grant temporary relief from his troubles, both the mental and physical kind. Jimbo's Pizza Shack has the greatest pie in the neighborhood, and they delivered beer as well. He got on the horn and ordered a large pepperoni with extra cheese and a six-pack of Coors beer. While he waited for his pie, he killed off the last three cans of Steel Reserve and watched a talk show where the topic of debate was about alleged Satanists kidnapping the neighbor's kids and puppies and eating them or something. What they were rattling off could only come from the mind of a paranoid schizophrenic, or a religious nut, like that bitch Abigail, who was just as crazy as the former, more so because one could help it and the other couldn't. He turned the TV off in disgust. He saw Abigail's face on all of them. His pizza arrived and he went at it like a man starving. He had two of his six beers with a sizable portion of the pie, then had two more beers while he dealt with a greased up beer shit. He had a fifth beer while he was getting dressed and downed his sixth beer after he tucked his revolver into the waistband of his jeans. Before the tires of his truck hit that dirt road that would lead him to the bitch, he picked up another 12er of Steel Reserve. He checked out with a wave and a smile to the fast stop clerk, telling him, "Hair of the dog, Chut, only thing that works." He had three beers on his way out to the shot up sign and had three more while he hiked up to the cabin by the old fishery. He tossed his empties on the rain-soaked ground, and when he saw Abigail standing amongst the ruins, he slammed another beer before approaching her. When she saw him walking toward her, she got up and went toward him in a telltale, toddler-esque way of walking that only drunk people had. She had a wine bottle in one hand and drank from it, exaggerating the throwback, the muscles of her skinny throat working in stark contrast to the slightly pudgy body. She wore a long dress and a sweater. He remembered a wide hip curl and tight jeans and a flimsy sweater that hung off one shoulder, exposing her bra strap. This Puritan look only repulsed him more. She slurred, "Mick, I'm so glad you came." She paused and her speech pattern slowed. "I'm so glad to see you." She tried to hug him and he brushed her grasping hand away and stepped back. She almost fell, but was able to stay upright. A look of pain and anger flared through her and she tilted her bottle back and staggered backwards. She began to shout, "So I see you still drink the sinner's drink. You seduced me, Mick, like Satan and Eve. I drank from the apple you tempted me with, and then planted the seed of abomination and sin into my womb." She slammed the bottle back, finishing it in one long gulp, then dashed it to pieces against the decrepit cabin. She continued shouting at him, You gave me witches. They were not even children. They knew the devil's sign, and they cut it into their flesh to please Satan. She shrieked, an inhuman sound. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Mick's blood ran cold, and her words struck him. He asks, What did you do to our children? My children. He dropped his case of beer and threw out his hands. Fresh rage coursed through his veins, and his face turned red, and spit began to fly as he shouted, What the fuck did you do, you crazy cunt? How could you not even tell me about them, huh? She laughed at him, her voice carrying it a tone of true edge of insanity. He spit. What did you fucking do? His voice growing louder as his anger flared even higher. He began to walk toward her, and she dashed around the corner and picked up a rod of rebar and swung it in an arch in front of her. She began speaking in that sing-song voice she used on the answering machine. I watched them play, like normal children. Then I bopped them on the heads and fixed them up in chains and cinder blocks and... Her voice changed to a hysterical shout. Then I tossed them into the water here to save their damn souls because they were witches. Mick, witches! Mick shouted back. They never had the chance to live. I never had the chance to know them. He picked up the stuffed cat and shouted, Did my little girl play with? His eyes rolled up into the back of his head, and in one swift, smooth motion, he pulled his revolver out of his waistband and shot Abigail in the head. The near point-blank range and the hollow .45 slug nearly split her head in half like a red and gray cantaloupe dropping on the ground. Blood, brains, and tiny fragments of skill splattered across the ground, not unlike the rain that had had a few hours ago. Abigail's body flopped bonelessly to the ground, and Mick's eyes returned to their normal position as he finished the statement. This toy? His rage faded as he realized what he had done. Huh? Abigail? Abigail? He sat down roughly on the ground and reached for his beer. Grandpa Jack was a little worried about his grandson. He'd been gone too long and he'd missed lunch. Grilled cheese sandwiches with mustard, barbecue potato chips, and root beer. He became even more worried when he couldn't find his lighter fluid and discovered he was missing a box of matches. He thought about the nice church lady's missing kids and dreaded a similar fate for Dean. And when the dogs showed up soaking wet before the rain, Grandpa Jack put on his coat, grabbed a hatchet and a flashlight, and set out into the woods, seeking out the old fish hatchery he knew was in the woods. He had gotten a little bit turned around and was heading a little bit more north than he should have, right as Mick was just about to begin shouting at Abigail, and it had gotten a little bit later in the day. Grandpa Jack was soaking wet from the rain, about to give up and call the police, which is what he should have done first, when he heard people shouting at one another and began walking towards them. When the gunshot rang out through the woods, he froze. He thought of Dean out there, all by himself, and silently cursed himself for not calling the professionals. He felt ill-equipped to handle a gunfight situation with a hatchet. But he was out there here and now, and he felt that if Dean needed him right now, he had to do something. He proceeded in the direction of the gunshot, slowly and with extreme caution. After about an hour of walking, he came upon an odd scene. A man sat on the ground near the remnants of a dilapidated cabin, idly holding a pistol with one hand and drinking a beer with the other. He had what looked like the stuffed cat that Dean had found yesterday in his lap. The man was crying. Close to him was the body of a woman, her head unrecognizable due to what had to have been a bullet resulting from a gunshot he had heard earlier. He searched the area for signs of his grandson and saw that the boy's plastic green soldiers stood in ranks near a charred lump of his grandson! Grandpa Jack screamed, "What did you do to my boy?" and brandished the hatchet and ran at the man. Mick's eyes widened in surprise and fright. The old man meant to kill him over my boy! He didn't really think about what he was doing. He just pointed the gun at the crazy kook and pulled the trigger. Once, twice, three times. The bullet caught the man low and to the side, neatly going through his liver. The second caught him in the neck, right above the collarbone, perfectly entering the carotid artery. The third caught him in the side of the face, taking half of it off and obliterated in a shower of blood. Mick blinked and finished the beer in his hand and opened up another and stood up. He watched vacantly as the ground seemed to soak up the impossible amount of blood seeping from the old man's body. He noticed a black lump with sickening realization, saw that it was the body of a boy, probably the old man's my boy. He killed his beer, crushing the can in his hands. He tossed the can down and said to himself, "My kids, whom I never knew, are bound in chains and concrete, and they're drowned and dead beneath this murky water. I killed the bitch who killed them, making me a murderer. There's a charred corpse sitting 6 feet from me, and I killed the boy's old man in self-defense, but I still killed him, and he thought I killed his kid. And I have half a 12-pack of a potent bum beer scattered all over the place with my spit and DNA all over it. They're gonna put me away for a long time." He lit a cigarette and quickly smoked it down to the filter. He tossed the butt into the grass and opened up his last can of beer, finishing it as fast as he could. He remarked to himself as he put the muzzle of the gun to the side of his head, "Unless..." He pulled the trigger, and with a bang, the smell of burning hair sent the contents of his skull to adorn with his final act of desperation, unwittingly completing the ritual that Dean had wrote out with his crayon this morning. the toy soldiers sat impassively, and the stuffed puppy and kitty stared with glass eyes as the earth around them began to crack and smoke as the unseen savior was unleashed upon the world. A keening sound filled the air from miles around, and the people of the earth trembled in their high homes and hovels, fearing what was to come.
Don't run away. It wasn't real. It was only just pretend. For those of you with a stronger constitution, why not stop by our merchandise store and check out the interesting items from the show and our resident artists. Also, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and like our Facebook page. You can also find us on iTunes and a variety of online platforms. Just search for the hashtag Satanic Players. What do you think? Will you summon and let us in?